ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Sport.
You're listening to AFL Saturday on your radio, ABC Sport Digital, and ABC Listen.
This is AFL Saturday.
Are the Adelaide Crows better placed now than they were in 2025 to make an assault on the premiership? And who is the competition's second best team? Geelong win for just the second time in their last seven games, but do you believe in them more or less than you did going into Thursday night's fixture? North Melbourne had their Hall of Fame last night. One man in particular got our attention as he was inducted last night as a Hall of Fame member. Are the Blues concerned about the presence and the hype of Josh Fraser? And what to make of what's going on with Damien Hardwick and his sons appearing to raise the white flag last weekend? How will they respond against the Bulldogs tomorrow? All of that to come on the award-winning AFL Saturday through ABC Sport.
To share it with Grundy. Hummer's here with the Crows, and Cook tumbles it back down the members' side. Chucked there by Rampy. But the Crows hang on for a 16-point win. They penetrate the Swans' SCG fortress with a season-defining victory in the wet. The Crows by 16.
It was a big win for Adelaide last night. There's no other way to chop it up. A huge win for the Crows as they draw within really a game of Sydney in second spot on the table. My name's Corbin Middlemouse. This is AFL Saturday on ABC Sport. I'm very pleased to say the Premiership pie, Luke Ball, is in the house. Hello, Bally.
Hi, Corby. Hello, everyone. I'm just feeling a little bit more relaxed in my seat today.
Yes.
Corby. Just, yeah, with my, with our co-host or our party today. Yeah. Who's, yeah, just a little bit less combative, and I'm just feeling I don't have to bring my...
You don't feel like you're in the blue corner and you're looking across the ring.
I don't have to bring my boxing glove today.
McMoldhouse is there waiting for you.
Nice and relaxed, that's right.
Well, we've got another games record holder. Man who's played more games than anyone else at the North Melbourne Football Club. He's played more games than anyone else on planet Earth. Not named Scott Pendlebury. He's won a boatload of All Australians, Premiership player, EJ Witten medalist, and now not just an Australian Football Hall of Famer, but a Hall of Famer at the North Melbourne Football Club. Congratulations, Brent Boomer Harvey.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. It's I might surprise you, boy. I might throw a couple of killing ones at you.
Okay,
and,
all right.
You might walk away too soon, have I?
You might walk away and want Mick back. Good to be here. It's love doing the radio and not doing no football games this week.
Yes.
Just going to watch the Kangas this afternoon. So
beautiful.
This is me footy fix. I love it.
So a lot of people would be, as I was, by the way. Boomer said he's got the North Melbourne Hall of Fame on Friday night. I thought, go and have a great time and they'll induct some more people into this elusive club. Didn't realise Boomer was actually going in. You were an Australian Football Hall of Famer back in 2022. So this is not an every year thing. Is that right, the North Melbourne Football Club? So congrats on going in last night.
Yeah, thank you. And you're right. The Kangaroos haven't done it for 10 years.
Wow.
Which is a bit different. Okay. And I don't think there's a set agenda where they do it every 2 years or 3 years or whatever it looks meant to look like. But for 10 years, and we've all said it, and we continue to say it, there was COVID in there, so that's probably thrown a spanner in the works. But now, a long time between drinks. Like, I got inducted last night with Corey McKernan, Adam Simpson, Greg Miller, who, of course, was at the football club when I first started, and then Dennis Pagan and Malcolm Blight.
Yeah.
It's a good lineup, isn't it, Corbin? If you wait that long, that's the one thing it allows you to do, doesn't it, is to assemble a really good...
What a night.
Crew of entrants.
It was good. It was a great night.
Good night.
Nigel Carmody hosted it, but then we had the great Mike Sheen come in and just work his magic with Malcolm Blight and Dennis Pagan. And he hasn't lost it. It's fair to say he hasn't lost it. It was a great little interview to watch.
Your calls throughout the program, 1300 558 222. We'll touch on a bit of the Kangas with Boomer as we work our way through the program. So 1300 558 222. Huge win for the Crows. So interestingly, when you look at where they were at this stage last year, Bally, they did come home with the wet sail. Obviously, Adelaide, they won their last nine games leading into finals, but essentially they were 12-5 then. Or 13-5 then, they're 12-6 now. So they're only one game worse off than where they were at the same stage last year. They're on a three-game winning streak with five to play, and that is their biggest scalp of the season so far. So they go to Sydney and become the first team this year to beat the Swans at the SCG. How impressed were you with what we saw from the Crows?
I thought it was a terrific win. They set it up early, obviously, and you know, hit the Swans, smacked them on the face. And it was interesting, Matty Nick saying there was obviously rain forecast, and Matty Nick saying we're very happy for that to come. Heavens open up, and they did. Mm. And It does seem to suit the best tackling team in the competition. And the Swans were good. They responded to the challenge, but then a powerful last quarter. And yeah, it feels like, and I think we asked Matty Nicks a few weeks ago when we had him on, it feels like this time last year they had the yellow jacket on and everyone was chasing them, and that was certainly the case in the finals as well. I feel like this team's almost better suited to being part of the chasing pack and to being the hunters, and that's how they play. They're across the board, and a lot's been spoken about and will rightfully be spoken about their star players, and Dawson's had another terrific year and Rankin's just starting to build again, isn't he, and play more midfield minutes now, and he's the class that goes in, and the big boys were great last night. I just look at their team and even last night up against Sydney's team, and Mick always talks about the bottom six as well, and I think that's Sydney's challenge at the moment. They're not getting out. There's such a heavy reliance on their top six, their star players. And when the heat comes against a good team, in the second half in particular, they're found wanting a bit. I thought, the Crows, players like Nan Curvis and Cook and Ball Ace last night, who's coming to the team, Toby Murray, even the big ruckman, is doing his thing. I feel like they're really well served across the board, certainly from an effort point of view. It's really clear, boom. If you play for Adelaide, There's a certain level of effort that's demanded, and if you don't bring it, you're not in the team.
You look at the back line, and you always think underrated. Bully, are they actually underrated anymore? I mean, they've been there now for a couple of years. Those established players, Worrell and these type of guys. I don't know if you can look at them anymore and say they're underrated down back.
Number one pressure team in it, just to support that.
Miller. Well. I mean, Miller is a star, isn't he? I think he's still underrated. Yep. I mean, he should be spoken about as an all-Australian halfback. I don't know, has he been? I'll double-check that.
Nope, but not yet.
He's playing like one. You mentioned Worrell. Michael Annie's recaptured a little bit of a form after a slow start to the year. But, Nan Curvis, Cook, these sort of guys around the edges, let's call it, that they're all, they're big, they're strong, and they compete.
So they're third on the table. There's still a game of percentage off second spot. The Hawks can actually move into outright third if they win on Sunday. They play the Tigers. They got the half game, obviously. But you look at Adelaide's run home. So Pies at home, Dons away, Tigers at home, Fremantle away, and then GWS to finish.
Heavy favourites in four out of their last five. And then who knows where Fremantle will be at that time. They might have signed up top spot. They might be managing players and the Crows, I think they won't fear anyone. And they'll probably be relying on other teams in terms of a top four finish. But we were talking just before we came on air. They're the sort of team that I don't think will fear finishing fifth or sixth, Boomer. And, being healthy and in good form, and we know that the wild card's going to present a bit of a different look at the finals in that first week. So they're going to, you finish fifth or sixth, you have the week off anyway.
Yeah.
And then I think they'll back themselves to go on a bit of a run.
They were 21 up at quarter time, 8 up at half time, 6 down at three quarter time. And in my mind, they were 7 goals down. That didn't look like it at all. And then to produce that final quarter was sensational. So a 16 point win. Matthew Nix spoke about how they're placed this year compared to perhaps where they were at the same stage last year, of course, when they were an 18 win team in the minor premiers.
It's probably lessons from last year and our ability to firstly get where we want to get to, which is September. That's like every team, we're here to play as well as we possibly can to qualify for football in September and that finals footy. The balance with that is us being able to have players at their best if and when you get there. So we've still got some work to do in that space, but for us to be able to manage Taylor this week, a huge bonus for our squad. Tex at his best is really important to us, and we will need to manage him for him to be able to do that. We also need to see our team like we did tonight, where can a slightly younger group get it done against the best or one of the best, and that's what Sydney are, and we did that away from home tonight. So I said in the post-game, I hope Adelaide's rocking at the moment, because it would have been one of those ones. I know my mum would have been sitting there stressing out and ready to abuse me anyway if we'd lost it, but she'd be up and about at the moment, which is good.
Matthew Nix last night post-game. So the Crows up to third for the time being. 1-300-558-222, the talkback number. That's 1-300-558-222. Who is the second best team in it as it currently stands? If Fremantle's the one seed, and you're not what the latter suggests, but at least in terms of your power rankings, who would you have as number two?
Well, Sydney are going to finish second. because they're still a game clear of Adelaide and their run home. We spoke about Adelaide's run home.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the Giants, the Saints, Port, Essendon, North Melbourne to finish with. You'd think that they're going to win four of them, which that puts them in second. I know you said not the ladder position. It's a clear cut for me at the minute, and the team that I'm thinking of is the Brisbane Lions.
Mm.
Can they go again? We know this time of year, they're just starting to sharpen a pencil, aren't they?
Mm.
Don't worry about the prelim part, the early part of the year, the middle part of the year. Let's get our troops ready to go, and they're sharpening their pencil right now. I can see it. You know, you get McCluggage back. He'll be playing unbelievable football in four weeks' time. Zorko back now in the mix.
Well, I think the exciting thing is it's up for grabs. It's up for debate, isn't it? That's the exciting thing in the competition. And then even with the top seed, and they're absolutely rightfully the top seed, there's still that lingering question mark as to how they're going to go when they get to when they get to September. So I think you're right. I think, you know, Brisbane are building, aren't they? And in terms of talent, we've been talking about it all year. In terms of talent, I feel like they're the team that can you know, win it at 90% to 95%. It's just whether, and it feels like Chris has got them now really arrowed in on on a 2 month opportunity, hasn't he? So I think if you had to seed them at the moment, I think that's right. Probably the Lions. I think the Hawks are the other one. And they get some players back this week. With Will Day back into that middle playing well, I think they're the other one who can really do some damage.
Are they still one gun midfielder, and that's why they went after Merritt last year? I feel they're one real good midfielder down, but for me, they're the best kicking team in the competition. Good kicking teams usually win a lot of games.
Yeah, and defensively too.
Yeah.
Barris, Battleback. I think I like what I'm saying with the Hawks too.
Andrew from Q East is the first of our callers, 1-300-558-222. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're well, thank you.
Yeah, good chat with you again. I've got a question about, you know, with all the talk about the rules and, like, umpiring. I mean, particularly coming off the back of last Saturday with the controversial call in the Hawks-Carlton game. How often is too often to be changing the rules? A co-worker at work suggested that rule changes should only occur every 5 years. What's your guys' thoughts about this?
It's an interesting take, isn't it, to have almost like a blackout period where, regardless of what happens in the game, we're not changing the rule. So don't even discuss it for 4 years, let's call it. It's an interesting thought.
It is. Your counter-argument to that is, what happens if they bring a rule in and it doesn't work and it is a real bad one? I think we've got one real bad one right now. It's the stand rule. And the visual of it just doesn't sit well with me. We've got guys facing the wrong way with their back to the kicker because they're too scared to do a 360 and stand the mark. It's bizarre.
I'm a stand rule believer. So
I think there's merit in it, Corbin, absolutely. But if you've got the football and I'm meant to be facing you, but all of a sudden now I'm facing the wing, looking at the stand and the guy can run. That's the visual part that I don't like.
Yeah. I think that the player would be able to turn around, wouldn't he? Like, is that the player trying to emphasise the...
But they're not doing it, are they?
Yeah.
I see it once a game now. I think it looks
too
terrible.
Yeah.
Or two people stand the mark because I don't know who's allowed to leave.
So since 2012, this is the highest transition that we've had in the game. So D50 to inside 50, the rate of 23%. So basically one in every four, the ball is moving from one end of the ground to the other.
And that's what they want.
And the average of stand free kicks for 50-metre penalties each round is less than 5 a weekend. So, and I feel like even like the Matt Stevic error last weekend, for example, that, and Ben Cameron pointed this out on the ABC AFL Daily podcast, that essentially that is not a stand rule free kick. That's an encroaching on the mark. That would have happened pre-stand rule that essentially that still would have been 50 metres. Yeah. So it does have an image problem. I'd 100% agree with you there with the stand rule at the moment.
Those are interesting numbers, aren't they? And I think that's, was it 5?
Average of 5.
They're jarring, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because they look silly. And so everyone, you know, those that, and we're all a bit like that, who are footy purists, let's call it, that's not how we want to play footy. Yeah. That's not how we grew up playing. We're asking them to do something that's not natural and against their instinct. So, but I tend to be with you, Cole. I don't think you could debate the fact that the original intention is absolutely, there's enough evidence to say that it's worked. It's just at times, the look of it. And the feel of it just is a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, the rule is working 100%. You just mentioned those stats, transition from defensive 50 to forward 50. That's what the AFL want, and it's fantastic.
And we tend to forget what it was like before that. And what we were crying foul about before that. Yeah.
We had some dark years, didn't we, in the way that the game looked. And I think the other thing is that, particularly for people that are a certain age, and you know, we're all around a similar age, but the it feels like, you know, people have this yearning for, you know, contest and congestion and everything else. That was never Australian rules football. If anything, the game now looks more like what it was traditionally, or what it was designed to be. Yeah, that was kind of borrowed from other sports, and sort of certainly throughout, you know, when you guys played in the mid-noughties, it became sort of more and more of the game. But it was never designed to be that. It was never meant to have, yeah, as many stoppages and contests as what had crept in.
To answer the question, though, from the caller, I think 5 years is a little bit...
A bit long.
Yeah, a bit too long.
Because we know what the coaches will do, won't they?
They'll manipulate every rule. Don't worry about that.
That's right.
I was interested in the AFLPA's survey during the week. I don't know how many of you guys caught up with this. The Insight and Impact Report, which is basically where they polled a bunch of the players on certain questions in the game. They answered questions when it came to, you know, concussion, to their experiences online, and, you know, some of the horrors that they faced there. But when they were quizzed about the laws of the game, I was fascinated by this. So 57% of players in this survey said their understanding is low when it comes to rough conduct. 66% said that they feel that the sanctions are unfair, so two in every three. And 44% say their understanding is low when it comes to careless contact with an umpire. And again, 68% there feel that the sanctions when it comes to that are unfair. There's a couple of ways to chop this up. I mean, one is, are the players simply watching enough football? Are they watching enough of the game if there feels like there's, you know, such a lack of understanding as to what is allowed and what isn't allowed? Or is it simply too complex for them to get their head around?
Oh, I think there's a mixture of both. Absolutely your first point, the boys now. And I think I was different. I'm not sure about you, but I'm a footy nerd.
Yeah,
I love watching it. And I still watch, if I was at home on the couch, I'd watch every game of football this weekend, no doubt. So no, they don't watch enough football. And if they did, they'd find out from Thursday night, Friday night, what the sort of rule of the week is. And they'd be smarter about it. I still think there's confusion, though. And I think it's more based around the rough contact in the tackling part. And is it based on outcome versus technique? So there is confusion with the players around that. I've got a quick question before you answer it, Bally. Why don't you get suspended or fined when you bump into the goal umpire?
That's
still an umpire, isn't he?
Good question.
Or is he?
Good question. Yeah. I mean, the goal umpire is a bit more, they'll jockey for positions, won't they? Yeah. Like they'll try and stand there on the line even when there's a bunch of players that are
not as
around.
Yeah, but that is a dangerous spot. But you're right. I would have thought if it was deemed to be really careless, then absolutely.
I've never seen a fine or a suspension on a goal umpire. And he's, remember David Roden, he got knocked over, and there was a few of them that they got knocked right over. You talk about the congestion.
The umpire
is at a stoppage,
hadn't thought
throwing
it
up with 16 people around him. There's more congestion there than there is on the goal line.
More leniency granted when maybe defenders are diving to touch a ball or something like that, and maybe it's dead.
Not
as careless, maybe. I'm just trying to. Yeah.
That's more important of you beating me to the ball in the middle of the MCG, Bally. I don't see the difference. But anyway.
I think part of the field umpire stuff is based on is a safety thing. There's been some significant injuries from the field umpires, you know, backing back and the whiplash and neck injuries and stuff. I can't quite recall. It's funny, I just had a flashback of that black and white footage of the goal umpire.
Yes. I was thinking the same thing.
I can't quite recall getting it. Maybe our listeners can ring in what game that was, but can't recall a goal umpire injury. Actually, no, that's not true. There was one, a goal umpire had an ACL, didn't he?
We had
back 4 or 5 years.
I know we had a boundary umpire earlier this year. Snap his wrist, slid over on Richmond Melbourne game, got taken out of the game. So
they got a spare goal umpire too. He or she sits on the bench and ready to go just in case.
1-300-558-222. This is the award-winning AFL Saturday on ABC Sport. Corbin Middlemouse, Luke Ball and Brent Boomer Harvey taking your calls. Danny from Dalesford is the next of our callers. Hello, Danny.
Hi, gentlemen. Just a couple of things. I'll come back to what I originally wanted to talk to you about with the strategies that are coming in. But just quickly on that goal umpire versus field umpire, the field umpire actually tells the players, I'm going to be exiting out this way. They know exactly where he's going to be. With a goal umpire, the goal umpire will rush to be in line with the kick so that he can see it between the posts. So the players or the goal umpire don't know where they're going to be until the ball's been kicked or comes over the goal.
Yeah.
As far as the game and the rules, I'm a bit concerned. It's becoming like basketball or soccer where the players can manipulate the umpire decision. So with the stand rule, You know, the player, rather than getting the ball moving, which it's designed for, if the two players are on the mark, the player will hold it up until, hopefully, one of them makes a mistake and draw the 50 metres. A player will throw knock the ball back onto the boot or shin of another player to try to force a kick in. And also the other one was the obvious one was Papley last night, keeping out, rather tackling a player, keeping out so that the player rushing the ball through would give a free kick.
Yeah, I didn't think that. In the end, it didn't cost them a goal. I thought that was a bit hard there in the third quarter, I think, especially in the conditions.
I didn't like it either, but I've checked this with our man.
All clear?
Razor's ticked it off. Said it's exactly how it should be done, that Papley sagged off and that's how it should be interpreted. I don't necessarily like that.
Razor on later?
He's on. Like, we can argue with him.
And usually I'm in lockstep with Razor.
I know,
I'm not copying that.
It's not in the spirit of the rule, I think.
I actually think Danny's on the money. That's a really good call. You watch players now that they've brought it to our attention, you watch for it. You get the ball 80 metres out, you clearly can't kick a goal. Players will absolutely fake the handball, hoping that they come over the mark, they get a 50 to kick a goal. That is happening more and more. And players, like coaches, always going to manipulate the rules to your advantage.
I agree, it happens. I can't remember the last time the player got sucked in, though, and bought it.
Well, they changed the rule.
They changed the rules.
If you faint the go and you're allowed to move now because beforehand everyone was doing
That's a good application. That's common sense, isn't it? Yeah, that's a really good use of common sense.
But I think the one stands out, we talk about there's only five a weekend. When one happens, it's often a dramatic penalty and everyone rolls their eyes and so it gets a lot of attention. But I would say 99 times out of 100, the play moves on quickly, the guy gives the handball, the ball zings. No one stands around and goes, hey, how good's the stand rule? Look at that. The ball's freed up. So it doesn't get the plaudits that it deserves when it works well, but it gets under a ridiculous amount of attention when it doesn't. I feel like if we went back to 1926, 100 years ago, and walked into a corner pub, that they'd be sitting around arguing about the umpiring, wouldn't they? Like, is there a little element
of this? That's never going to change.
It comes around every single year, and it sort of feels like in the depths of winter that we all get a little grumpy. Perhaps talking points are short, and it feels like the umpiring dominates a lot of conversation. I feel like it's been highlighted in the last 2 years in particular, where Laura Kane, who was in the role previously, got a whole lot of heat and. We can have a debate about whether there was a little bit more on that for certain reasons or others or whatever it turns out to be. And then it was, let's get these great football people and people from Clubland in at AFL House and they're going to clean it up and we're never going to have any arguments again when it comes to the running of the game. And so Greg Swan's there and Tom Harley and everything else. And you know what? They're great people too and they do a good job and everything else the same way that Laura Kane was. But it's still the same issues. We're still talking about umpiring. We're talking about little things in the game that aren't necessarily, why don't we clean up the little things? And it's a huge industry and there's lots of conversation around it. But I can't help but feel like some of these issues repeat every single year, regardless of what we're doing.
Corbin, is footy that's a silly question already. I know it's going to sound silly. Footy's an evolving game, right? We've always got to keep up with what's new and we look at every other sport around the world. It's like any business, isn't it? You've got to evolve with going forward. So you get a lot of people saying, just leave the game, leave the game. You actually can't just leave the game. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to be a silly look in 5 years.
It is in pretty good health, isn't it, overall? Yeah. Like it's, I think that
it's
more
a great game.
A lot of changes have been through necessity. I mean, you can't on one hand talk about, shine a big light on concussion and player safety.
And do nothing
and
about
do
it.
Nothing about it on the field. So a lot of the changes have been through necessity. Now that to me, that doesn't mean that the game's gone soft or anything like that. I mean, you go and sit on, and as you will this afternoon, but you see it with Cooper, don't you? I mean, the game. Gosh, where did the St Kilda Port game? Like some of those hits and it is a ferocious game. Played at breakneck speed. So you're right, Guy. Yeah. I'm with you there, Corb. There's always going to be issues. Having said that, I just quickly before we finish up, there is the reality of let's call it the umpiring list, and Greg Swan's been on the record of saying this. They're trying to fast track some more inexperienced and younger umpires through the system. And the reality is that, like young players, inexperienced players, they're going to make the odd mistake that really drives people mad, the 50-51 or the 40-61. They're going to make those mistakes, but they're only going to make less of them by umpiring in these sort of big games under pressure. So I think, it's frustrating for supporters, no doubt, but we just need to be a bit patient with it as well.
Have you ever umpired a game of football?
It's a great question, and I think everyone should have to umpire at the junior level. Do a season of umpiring.
I've done one game, and I literally came off and I said, I will never, ever do that
again. I honestly think at some stage, at 13 or 14 or 15, everyone should have to do... You know, a season of
I've never been abused. I actually thought I'd done an unbelievable job. I'd never been abused so much in my life for an hour.
Russell from Surrey Hills, the next of our callers, 1300 558 222. Hello, Russell.
Yeah, hi, how are you going?
We're well, thank you.
That's right. Hey, I've got a modification to the stand rule, and what I would do is if you have been in the contest, you know, like a contested mark between two players, then the player who doesn't have the ball is not subject to the stand rule. But if someone has just taken an uncontested mark and the opposition sort of runs up and sort of stands there, then they are subject to the stand rule. Mm. And that would mean it would sort of balance the playing field a bit because, you've got someone who's come in and competed and tried to contest with a mark. They shouldn't be unduly penalised for having to stand. So that would be my take on it.
Good on you, Russell. Appreciate that. We'll take that as comment. 1300 558 222. It's the opposite at the moment, isn't it? If you're in the 5 metre radius, you have to stand.
Have to stand.
If you're not in the radius, you can't get into the area.
But I think only one has to stand, and I think that's where Russell's
one
heading.
Per team. It's up to you to work out team. Who it is.
Okay.
It's not the infringing player or anything like that. Mm. Kel is in Colac. The next of our callers, 1300 558 222. Hello, Kel.
Yeah, thanks, fellas, for taking me call. My call's in relation to Fremantle, and Cara Antonio made a comment regarding Fremantle when they were playing Gold Coast, and she said that Fremantle was one of the best teams that she'd seen live for some time. And I'm just wondering, in the panel, you obviously watch a lot of footy. Do you feel the same way, like it's really good to watch a good team when they play and they, you know, that they're well drilled? And so if you could just ask that the guys, what do you think of that? It was a really good comment. I really liked it. So what's your view in Fremantle in regards to the way they play?
Thanks, Cal. Appreciate that. It's interestingly, just on the data viewpoint before the guys give the eye test, Daniel Hoyne said during the week, Fremantle number one for offence, number two for defence. If that profile maintains, it'll be the best in 20 years that we've seen a team
profile,
if they go on and win the premiership.
Yeah. And I think it backs up the eye test, doesn't it? And I think from what it seems like, what they've added is the offensive stuff. I think they've been building. And look, you can argue that that's all great teams do. They start with a defensive system and a rock solid system, and there's a non-negotiable about the contest. You've got to have players who can win contests. But it feels like they've really unlocked their offensive game this year.
And I think you coach to personnel as well. I mean, you add in Shea Bolton. Mm. He's offense or defense. Very good offense, isn't he? And I'm sure he does great defense things, but he is an offense beast. You got Hayden Young, who can kick the football he's unbelievable. So you coach around personnel as well. And I think that was the knock on Longmuir beforehand, not enough offense. And you're right. I heard someone say it the other day, Bully, they've matured as a group. And it's happened really, really quickly. They have matured. They're not relying on Brayshaw or Sarong. They have got an abundance of young kids now coming in and playing around. Then you look at their three tools just work. There's not too many other teams in the competition that have three that work. Them three just work. Yeah. And they're a really good team to watch now.
Yeah, they are. And they're healthy, clearly. You know, and you need a little bit of luck with that, but they've clearly prepared themselves really well and continue to do so. You get back to that Sydney game in the second half. They were off for a 5-day break and travel, and they just ran them ragged. And so they must be really fit too. Yep. So that's to your point. You play to your strengths and your team strengths, and clearly they're not only a physically strong team, but a very very fit running team.
Thanks, Cal. Appreciate your call. 1300 558 222 is the talkback number. We'll be back in 15 seconds from now. More of your calls coming up. 1300 558 222, plus the Cats. A huge injury out of their Thursday night encounter with the Saints. So where does it leave them in the broader context of the season? This is AFL Saturday on ABC Sport.
How much can we really know about the dead?
In our podcast, we're gossiping each week about the divas, ruffians and conmen of Australia's past.
So join me, Alicia Sibbins.
And me, Lee Boucher. Search the Dead Can't Sue podcast on ABC.
This is AFL Saturday.
On ABC Radio, ABC Sport Digital
and ABC Listen.
Just look for the AFL button.
They're back in the winners list. And Geelong extend St Kilda's drought at Kardinya Park. 27 years and counting, the Cats by 27. That's how it finished on Thursday night. So Geelong winners for just the second time in the last 7 weeks. They get home by 27 points. They kicked the first 26 points of the night.
Yeah.
And really, they never surrendered the lead from that point on. There was a huge moment in the third quarter where Cooper Sharman could have run one to the goal line. He had a shot from 40 out. It slid across the face, missed. He kicks that goal, Saints within 11.
11, yeah.
All the momentum having kicked the last four. Instead, he misses. Wooshka. Ball goes one end of the ground to the next. Geelong score from the kick out. They kick six of the next seven goals and led by 47 points in the last quarter. A question out of this game, though, is do you believe in Geelong's premiership hopes more or less coming out of the performance on Thursday night? So, yes, they win, but, gee, they lose a huge name in Max Holmes, yeah, who's off to Brisbane for surgery.
So I think that's the point, isn't it? I think it was a good performance, wasn't it? A really, you know, mature performance. Everyone focused on the seven changes and the outs, and wondered whether, you know, that was too many, and you know, that they'd lose their connection off the back of that. But they were too strong early, weren't they? And I think even Ross admitted that they dialed the heat up, and the Saints weren't able to handle it. Started in the middle of the ground, you know, led by Bailey Smith, who was just superb again. And I think having Myers and you know, Close back in, I think even though they're not at their best, it just looked a bit more like the Geelong that we've come to know over that.
It's amazing to think that he could be sitting in the Grind Myers, that is, sitting in the twos, playing football for that football club, because he's a walk-up start for any other team in the competition. But, yeah, they're good, and I'm sure we'll touch on Max Holmes in a second. It's massive. It is massive. He's actually a star. Mm. Watch him live a couple of times now. He's run and drive off halfback or in the guts when Bailey Smith needs a bit of a chop out. And around them, they've just got some hard players, haven't they? And they don't lose down there. I was the same boy. I got sucked in the seven changes.
Yeah.
I changed my tips 15 minutes on my tip. 15 minutes before they played, I thought, seven changes, this is not good. And they just win down
really
there.
Looked like, they had a run, didn't they? But it just felt like the Cats always had their measure. But that's a big blow, isn't it? He's injured that leg before, I think. He's had a similar injury, but surgery straight away. That's syndesmosis. God, why is syndesmosis such a thing these days?
That's a season, isn't it?
Well, it'd be hard to see him coming back.
And if he does come back, it's not the running Max Holmes that we're...
That's right,
Played 80 consecutive games, so he's had a long run at it now since he's obviously his famous hamstring injury in that prelim.
That's right, yeah. And a hamstring for Manor as well, who's been in terrific form, so that makes the Myers and Close... reintroduction even more important, and I think what Holmes goes out, the focus, the opposition's focus will turn squarely to Bailey Smith, won't it?
Shut him down, bigger chance.
Yeah. And look, he was brilliant the other night. He had attention at times from Windhager, didn't he? But he wasn't able to curb his influence at all. But how is he going to go without his running mate there in Max Holmes? And who have they got to bring in to really cover? Yeah. It's hard to cover a play like that, isn't it? But whereas with Cameron, I feel like, and we saw it with young Polkinghorne, who was brilliant, wasn't he? And he had Wilkie for a lot of the game. And
They'll find one to replace him.
They usually do, don't they?
Yeah. So you think Holmes is a greater loss than Cameron?
I think for right now, I think he is. I mean, Cameron hasn't been at his best for a significant part of the year, has he? And I think they, with Dangerfield going forward, or you know, near young Polkinghorne comes in, they were able to cover that. We saw that the other night. I just think Holmes, he's a top 20 player in the comp, isn't he? Yep. Maybe even better. So, and I think the flow on effect, as I said, given they're a bit light on through the middle of the ground anyway, Holmes is a huge...
Oh, I totally agree with Bawley. Yeah. I think he's a bigger loss than Jeremy Cameron now.
If you were stacking, you know, Geelong's best players or the guys you would least want to lose, what are they? Two of the top three, two of the top four, if you want to put guys like Tom Stewart and Bailey Smith in that mix. Didn't escape Chris Scott post-game last night. This is before they knew the extent of the injury, and he already had those thoughts.
I think everyone says syndesmosis these days. Like, that's the easy go-to, but there has been that suggestion, but... Oh, I covered my ears, to be honest. I'll just wait to see what it is and deal with it when we know. But yeah, I mean, but it is obviously it's frustrating. It's, but it is the game. My, if you asked me a couple of weeks ago, who do you really not want to lose? Yeah, Cameron and Holmes would be up there.
Absolutely. Only 23,737 there on Thursday night, so brand new spanking stadium and all these seats.
Don't love their Thursday nights, I heard, no. I heard Lingy say.
Yes, but...
The run home too, Corbin, is pretty good for the Cats.
Yeah, they've got a good last three. They're going to have to try and pinch one of the next two, I think, or you know they'll probably find themselves in that six to eight spot.
D's next, Pies after that.
Yeah, and you think about the D's, and just one more thing. I mean, I thought the best player on the ground, I mean, Smith maybe, but... Rowan Marsh. So, again, that challenge that they've got rears its head.
It's been around for a long time. Their ruck dilemma,
for years,
hasn't it?
They've never been able to plug it. And, you know, DeConing showed a little bit. And Young, his name escapes me. Edwards, the big fellow.
Yeah,
tried hard. But Rowan Marshall just had his way with them. And you think about who they've got next week and ahead, if they're going to make any sort of run. You know, how are they going to go against Gorn? How are they going to go against Jackson, Grundy? It's a real issue.
Who starts favourite Friday night? D's or the Cats?
Well, right here, right now, Melbourne, the MCG. We'll see how they go today.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Might determine how they go today. They win by 100. It's definitely Melbourne if they they lose today, the Kangas.
Brent Harvey in the house. AFL Saturday on ABC Sport. Corbin Middlemass and Luke Ball taking your calls. 1300 558 222. James is the next of our callers. Hello, James. Appreciate your call.
G'day, thanks for taking my call, guys, and thanks for the great preamble. I just want to mention that with all these academies that are interstate, why don't we have a dedicated Indigenous Players Academy in Darwin or Alice Springs?
I think the answer to that is, so the Next Generation Academies, which were set up probably almost about 10 years ago now, are... designed to attract and bring in Indigenous talent. And so those regions that you spoke about, so every club was designated a region, including Darwin and Northern Territory, and broader Northern Territory. I think Alice Springs falls under Melbourne's area, and I think Darwin's is the Suns.
That's right. So that they are linked. So First Nations players can essentially be NGA picks to those clubs and are tied there. So
we spoke about it, didn't we, last week. So I think at the front end, you know, getting those young footballers in at a young age is really good. The challenge is then when it comes to drafting them, you know, when the rubber meets the road. I think that was that conversation we had last week, whether a Category B rookie spot, so a spot or two outside of the club's primary list, because what can tend to happen is when the spaces on the list are so small and they have to make a 50-50 decision between a maybe an Indigenous player and another non-Indigenous player, that they might tend to err towards the other side. So maybe I think there's some merit in that, having spots outside the primary list for
and they've tried it. They've tried it for everything else, haven't they? They've had the veterans list. They've had the sub list. They've had a lot of lists. Let's keep exploring. Absolutely,
James. Appreciate your call. Rod is the next of our callers. Hello, Rod.
G'day, fellas. How are you?
Well, thank you.
My question or my statement is around James Hurd and also Dean Solomon. So the next 5-6 weeks is just, just a waste of time, basically, for Essendon. This is a silly suggestion, but might get some ideas going. But my suggestion is that Hurd comes in now.
What do you reckon, Corby?
Not for me. Well, sell it to me, Rod.
I can't. Well, they're also about her being the Messiah and coming back, and that the, you know, how he's going to, it's going to be the narrative of he's coming back and making things right and doing all the right things, and, you know, the redemptive script. But I don't believe in it, for one. But can we just get it out of the way? Just get her out of the way, move forward, get a real coach, get like an up to date coach, get someone like Corey Enright. In the seat and move forward.
So he's saying, Rod, don't wait. If it has to go that way anyway, let's get him in for a 6-week season now.
So I get the media storyline around it. You know, as a media person, I'm also an Essendon fan, to declare that up front. There's no better story than James Hurd comes back to Essendon and the drama that's associated with it. But I'd And I get why it's of interest for a lot of people in the media. We're not hearing anything out of Essendon to suggest that that's over the line yet. So we've had two runs at this now. One when Brad Scott was initially sacked and it felt like, oh, I heard it's a fait accompli. Then the noise quieted down. They went and did a process. Now the process has begun. Hurd's met with Essendon once. They had one coffee date. And then they'll go to the next round of interviews and you think Hurd will be part of that in some way, shape or form. But we are a long way still from James Hurd being appointed as the next senior coach of Essendon. So I get that people, you know, that duck in and out of this space and they might, you know, hear the news and the noise in the media and feel like it's all over the line. I still don't feel like, as we sit here today on the 18th of July, that it's the favoured way. He's in the process, but he still has to win the job. And the other thing is the Essendon board and the Carlton board and all these other clubs that are out there trying to find a coach at the moment, it is a stacked field. So you're going to want to have a really good explanation to your members as to why we're ignoring John Longmire or Adam Simpson or Simon Goodwin or any of these premiership coaches, and we're going to ignore Ken Hinckley with 13 years of experience and all these top two finishes and everything else. Like, it is a very competitive field. So there is a long process, I think, to still be played out.
Not
before.
To mention the highly regarded assistants. All those guys. First timers with great CVs.
Does it have to be an Essendon person?
I don't think so.
You're an Essendon man. Yeah. Do you think it needs to be? Because that's the noise coming out of Essendon. Yeah. It has to be an Essendon person.
I get the sense that there would be in Essendon's. I think at this point they still don't actually know. Like they're going to go through the process with an open mind and find who they want. I think they would love to have a lot of Essendon people involved, but not necessarily as, you know, it has to be the senior coach. So why couldn't you have a figurehead and then you have all these other club legends working in and around the club? So there's one part which is the passion for the club, and I spoke about this a bit on Monday, that I actually feel like what's playing out at the moment counts against the James Hurd case, and I hope he gets a run at it. And if he wins the job, it's going to have to be based off more than just passion for the club. It was put to me that, you know, James Hurd's like the Carey figure, and Dean Solomon was like the Archer figure when it comes to Essendon, right? In the way
it
pans out there. So part of that, when you look at it in that particular lens, you couldn't find a more passionate person about Essendon than Dean Solomon. So for James Hurd, it needs to be more than just passion, because we're seeing right now what passion looks like.
I was going to make that point. What's not helping at the moment is the on-field performance. And it's not about necessarily wins. There's just no...
Does that hurt Solomon?
Fight. Well, I don't know if he really... certainly hasn't declared. Does it hurt him if he really wants a job? Perhaps it does. I don't know. But again,
he's not going to get the job.
He's not going to get. No, and he hasn't been in the system per se either. Yeah. Remember, he's come off the board now. I just don't think that can happen anymore. But you're right. Amazing Essendon person. But they just need, again, not necessarily a win. They just need a bit more to hang their hat on the field at the moment. And that will just, everything else will quieten down a bit.
So the timing, Corbin.
Yep.
So you're saying no right now? No, about James Hurd coaching. Yeah, it's a flat
too
no.
Early.
And
too early.
In agreement.
Yep.
When, and not James Hurd, when do they need, when's the timeline? When do they need to appoint this coach?
Well, usually they bob up around September, don't they?
It is imperative.
Early, mid-September.
They have to let him have a hand in the trading, the drafting. Yeah. I think this
whoever the coach is.
Whoever it is, take James Hurd out of it. Whoever it is, they need to be front and centre in the list that they want to build.
I think we'll hear it. They'll be targeting a decision in the last 2 weeks of the home and away season, I reckon.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is about a month away.
Four weeks,
The Blues are a fascinating conversation. I mentioned it off the top. I almost feel a little bit like the Blues are trying to hold off this huge barnstorming narrative of Josh Fraser, that it feels like the momentum that they certainly lived through with the Teague train. And he's got a 7-1 record, obviously thudding back down to earth last week with the loss to Hawthorn in the wet. But they play Collingwood tonight, who they never beat. In the last 31 meetings, Carlton have won 6 of them. So this is their chief rival, and they never, ever beat the Pies. And now they're in this point where they're playing for a wildcard spot. Collingwood, we talk about them being the gatekeeper. If Carlton win tonight and Josh Fraser goes 8-1, and it's the name that won't go away, and he said multiple times that he doesn't want the job and everything else.
Sign him on Monday morning.
The Carlton Football Club are going to have to, again, trying to explain to their members who have been through absolute misery. You know, really, haven't won anything. Their best footy memory in the last 30 years is a prelim run or whatever in 2023. But they've tried everything. They've tried the caretaker. They've tried the messiah. They've tried the best credentialed assistant coach. That, imagine if you go on a run where you win 8 out of 9 games, and then you've got this guy there that's clearly found the secret stuff, whatever it is. He's, you know, competing for a wild card spot, and he gets the team in the position. And you're going to say, just based off whatever happened with Teague or whatever it turns out with, no, we're going in a different direction. Imagine if Josh Fraser goes and coaches another team and has overwhelming success or whatever it turns out to be. How can you be so sure that the guy that's currently there performing the job is not the guy?
I don't think, knowing Graham Wright a little bit and what I saw, I don't think he'll be concerned with any of that. I think what it will be is a decision as to whether Josh joins the process, but they're going through a process. You know, and what, if you don't like that word, they're going to stick to their guns as to what it looked like was going to look like 8 weeks ago. He could run the slate from here on in. They're still going to, and it'll be whether, hey Josh, you've had a good look at it now. Do you want to apply for the job? But there'll be no handicapping either. He'll be in the mix with whoever else it is. And
for what it's worth, I think he's doing an amazing job. Not just win loss. I actually love his. His interviews after the game, he's still wearing his hoodie. You know, he's. I think he's fantastic. I think he's a breath of fresh air. Like actually saying, and people are starting to question. Oh, is he really thinking this? I actually think he is. I think what you see is what you get, and the honesty for me is pretty refreshing.
Yep. Do you think Carlton's worried about the external hype that comes in when if all of a sudden he gets the support of the Carlton fan base? And they come, and then all of a sudden, the Blues are trying to run a process concurrently to that, and it's clearly there's a fan favourite pick.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I don't think Graham Wright and Chris Davies, those two very experienced footy people, have made big decisions. This is their opportunity to stamp their imprimatur on the club. That not at all. I don't think.
Jack Noel essentially reported today it's still not too late for Josh Fraser to be part of this process yet. James Kelly, by the way, there was a report also by Jack during the week essentially saying he's going to prioritise the Carlton job over the Essendon job, which sort of my ears pricked up when I heard that, and I asked him about it on Thursday night when he joined us on ABC Sport.
I'm sort of not fully in or fully out of any process at this stage, and I think... Specifically about the Essendon one, I reckon there's been enough noise around the whole process itself. So I'm kind of reserving my right not to talk about it if I don't have to. Out of respect for both footy clubs, I don't want to be talking about either one out of school. Their process is their process. How they want to do it is up to them. So I'm just along for the ride, and I'll find out what I need to find out in due course.
So he went on to essentially say, look, he's not out of the Essendon process. And I kind of thought on that point, well, you don't really have a decision to make, do you, until you're offered both jobs. Mm. Then it's at the point where you essentially got to say, hey, I'm more in this one or I'm more in that one. Is that unusual?
I heard that. Has he been quoted as saying that he was in on one and out on the other?
Well, you heard what he said there. That feels like that's a Chris Scott answer there.
Yeah, and I thought he answered it pretty well. Correct, it was.
Yeah. I'm still trying to think of what he said. I can't even remember what he said now.
I think it's also, I genuinely believe them, given it's they both happened so early in the season, and this is a guy who's all in on his current club and his current role and trying to push towards another premiership with them. I just think they're not really ready to fully commit to it yet, to get their ducks in a row. And he wants to be a senior cut, no doubt about it, as does Hayden Skipworth and Corey Enright. Possibly Josh Fraser now, but it's a big decision, and so I just think that it's all happened a bit too early for them, and I think he's trying to buy himself a bit of time there.
How many years did he spend at Essendon, James Kelly?
Couple as a player and then a couple as a coach. He really impressive. So I think he gets there at some stage.
So does he qualify as an Essendon person on the back of that?
It's a good question.
Good question. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Tony is the next of our callers from Fitzroy. Hello, Tony.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to comment on that free kick reversed against Nasaya, and I'd like to see that happen more often. You've won the free kick. Get on with it. This rubbish about letting your opponent know about it, it's undisciplined, it's selfish, it's putting your ego before the team, and it's got its parallel with in cricket we had a send-off and Pat Cummins stamp that out. So I'd like to see the umpires come down even more harder on it and get rid of it.
I agree with that. I can't stand the taunting. Even if it's not a major thing or a major action, I don't like it at all. So, and I agree, it's putting yourself before the team for even for that brief moment. And I get it. And he had a rough night, didn't he?
Yep.
He had which is always going to happen. He had the best tagger in the game at the moment in his back pocket the whole night, but you've just got to be you've got to be disciplined, good. And I agree, good call.
And Greg Swanagrace, doesn't he, yeah, with the taunting rule, he ruffled someone's hair, and as he said, during reinforced during the week, they didn't have to change any rules for that. It counts as high contact. You touch someone above the neck, free kick.
They brought that in a long time ago, though. I reckon maybe 7 years ago, and then it just disappeared. But now it's obviously back on the agenda. And yeah, did they make a rule? Was that an official rule change, or was just umpired differently?
They just basically, yeah, the said way it's interpreted.
Right, this is how it's going to work.
Didn't have to change an official rule for it. Grant from Port Cook. Hello, Grant.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. A lot's been said about St Kilda's off-season and the player movements. And a big part of that was the decision to move on Jack Steele as the captain. Given the emergence of the likes of Hugo Garcia, Darcy Wilson, Philippou is coming on the last couple of weeks, have been really good. Max Hall has also been really good. Jack Steele's been very good for Melbourne. Probably tape it off a little bit. Is it one of those rare possibilities that all parties won in that situation?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a fair comment. You take the emotion out of it, which you can't be sort of flippant about that, because this is a guy who captained the club, dual best and fairest winner, you know, real heart and soul type player. So, you know, you take the emotion out, and I think it's a reasonable call, because if he's taking a set of bounces of a Garcia and a Darcy Wilson, they don't get the opportunity to develop like they have. So from a pure footy point of view, I think that's a good call. I think it's been a positive, or that opportunity for the Saints players has been positive, and I think he's had a real impact at Melbourne too, especially with Oliver and Petrarca moving on.
We're on the clock here, as I always get crunched towards the back end of the program, but the Roos, Boomer, if they don't finish in the top 10, is the season still a success for the Kangas?
I've got to be careful how I answer this, Corbin. The short answer for me would be yes, from where we were last year. But if I go back 4 years when Alistair Clarkson came into the football club, to say that we wouldn't make a 10, I think 4 years ago, yes, it would be a disappointment. I think right now you could say, yes, it still could be a success with a launch pad to go again next year. But next year becomes a bloody big year.
Yeah, I agree. Percentage at 91.5, take the Freo game out, I think that probably goes up towards 95, 96. So to me, that says in games for longer,
yep,
pushing teams that they need to start beating next year.
Correct.
And today's a good example of that. So it's a winnable game today. Melbourne away from, you know, at Marvel, Melbourne entitled to be favourite, but this is a game where North should be really sizing up a win.
Four of their eight wins are Richmond and Essendon.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we get from the Kangas today. We'll be there, Borley, for that. Yep. Just on, where was it? Oh, the Suns. So, curious week. Damien Hardwick basically says, season's pretty much gone. Wave the white flag. They're only a game and percentage out. Club was pretty quick to try and walk that back during the week and obviously try and sell tickets to Sunday's game where they're hosting the Western Bulldogs tomorrow. What do we get from the Suns? Like, do they come out breathing fire? Do they come out like, you know, they've already got the queue in the rack? Oh, I'm fascinated as to what we're going to get from the Suns and what we're going to get from the Bulldogs. I think the psychology of sport is huge in this game.
Yeah, I've been waiting for that fire to happen the last 7 weeks.
Yeah.
Is it seven in a row they've lost?
Seven.
Yeah. Yeah. Since the Kangaroos came from they've fallen off a cliff, isn't it funny? Since that game that we did.
And every game I look,
they
think
good that day.
Yeah.
Anderson, Rao, King, Humphreys, they're just going to stand up. It's going to be a big game. Miller. And it's just not happening.
Yeah.
It's quite bizarre. And I think the coach come out and said that in frustration too. Yeah. I know it's in a press conference and it gets built up hugely, but they still think they can make finals, clearly.
We've got a few texts too about Nicky Winmar, who obviously has been dumped from the Australian Football Hall of Fame during the week after the serious charges. Didn't get any calls on that front, but I think that's absolutely the right call. I mean, and I know there's some overlapping issues here when we talk about trauma from repeated concussions and possible CTE, and I think Nicky's even said in the past that he feels like he's suffering from that. It's a First Nations player, and obviously the critical figure that he's been in the history of the football club. They're all parts of this overlapping issue in the Venn diagram, but when it comes to violence against women, it's pretty cut and dry that this is an open and shut case. And there is a clause in the Hall of Fame that allows for that. It was also put forward about some other members that are part of the Hall of Fame and what's happened there. And when it comes to, you know, serious criminal charges, it's not of the same level. A few of those have been accusations that have been out of court settlements, whatever it's turned out to be. So there's the differentiator there. I think it's only Barry Cable and now Nicky Winmar as the only two players that have been removed from the Hall of Fame on what is, an all-round a very sad episode for the game. Hall of Famer, two-time over. Congratulations, Boomer.
Thanks, boys. Have a good call today. Go to Kangas.
Can't get an hour's sleep.
Thanks to Pat and thanks to Jules for all their work on the program. We're out of here.